February 4th, 2011. It's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Drupal Podcast number 91. We get together every few weeks or so and talk about Drupal. I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm joined today by
Jeff Eaton
and
Kent Bai
and
Seth Brown
and also
Earl Miles.
Yes, so we've got Earl on the podcast today. This is also Seth Brown's first podcast with the Lullabot people. Say hi, Seth.
Hello.
Hi, Seth.
Well, am I getting paid for this? Because I might lose my intrinsic interest.
It's part of being a full-time Lullabot is, you know, you're required to
occasionally be opinionated.
Little shenanigans. We can get Earl on, you know, and we try and distract him with shiny things. But yeah.
But,
so Seth is a project manager for Lullabot and kind of is managing most of our development projects right now. And he's always got thoughts and ideas about things. We thought we'd have him come on this podcast, as well as the always wonderful and always opinionated, your favorite creator of views and panels, Earl Miles.
Are you saying I have opinions and they're strong?
I'm saying you're a wonderful human being.
Aw, thank you.
Also, don't forget taxonomy redirect.
Yes.
Oh.
And
I'd like to forget that.
The node queue, the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
There were some you originally created what now we call the flag module and had an interesting name when it started out. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But anyway.
It was use bookmarks. Because I never intended anyone to use it. It was just an example.
Right.
It turned out to be useful.
To be a very good example. So today, we're going to talk about what it seems like the entire Drupal community is talking about, at least on Twitter, over the past week or so. The concept of, that's in parentheses, the concept of the Drupal App Store, because people are talking about this as if it exists already, but it doesn't. It's just a concept. But we're going to explain to you what that is and why you should care and express some opinions about it in just a moment. But first, we want to mention the Webchick tour. Angie Webchick Byron, who is the Drupal 7 co-lead maintainer person, is on tour right now talking about dun-dun-dun, Drupal 7. That's right. We're doing two-day seminars across the country, and Angie has done events in San Francisco, L.A., and Denver so far. And then this month, February 17th and 18th, she'll be in New York. February 19th and 20th, she'll be in D.C., and February 22nd and 23rd, she'll be in Atlanta. And it's really a great event, a really great way to get up to speed with Drupal 7. Everybody's talking about Drupal 7. If you're going to DrupalCon and you want to, you know, be hip and know what you're talking about, you should go to this thing and study up ahead of time. And if you're not going and you're local to one of these cities, it's a great way to, you know, get involved, keep track of what's going on without needing to go all the way to Chicago.
And in addition, there is actually training coming up at DrupalCon Chicago as well.
If you are going to DrupalCon, you don't need to miss out on the Lullabot training.
We're freaking everywhere.
There's a day of training before DrupalCon, and lots of people are doing training, and we are one of them. Mm-hmm. Jeff, what are we doing?
We're doing actually site building with Drupal 7, looking at, you know, how you put together basic sites with Drupal core and like how that's changed from Drupal 6, module development with Drupal 7, and jQuery bootcamp, which is actually pretty cool because it's not just Drupal specific. So for anybody who's interested in taking advantage of some of the stuff that's there and baked into Drupal but hasn't really had a chance to tackle the client-side scripting side of things, it's a great opportunity to dive in and actually figure out, you know, how to make jQuery sit up and bark.
Yep.
Woof, woof.
Got a lot of announcements. We mentioned on our website, I don't know that we've mentioned on the podcast yet, but we're doing the Do It With Drupal conference again this year. We've done this conference twice before. Previously, it was in New Orleans. This year, it's going to be in Brooklyn, which, for those of you that don't know, is one of the boroughs of New York City. And it's going to be happening October 12th, 13th, and 14th of this year. And we've got a lot of really great speakers that we'll be announcing. And we'll be opening registration on February 14th. I'm going to announce one of the speakers right now. Earl Miles will be speaking.
Woohoo!
We're very honored to have Earl. He's coming come to New Orleans with us, and now he's coming to Brooklyn with us. And we're going to, I don't know, buy leather coats and vintage guitars and Brooklyn it up, you know. It's awesome. Also, you know, if you're too impatient for all of these things that we're talking about that are in the future, we have Drupalize Me, Drupalize, DRUPALIZE.me is the new video website that we launched about a month, two months ago, something like that. It's got all of the Lullabot learning videos, all the Lullabot videos from the Drupal conference. You can go see Earl's past talks before you come see Earl's future talks. And they're all there on Drupalize Me monthly subscription. Go check it out. And finally, we wanted to mention Earl's book, Drupal Building Blocks, which is out. That's so great.
Amazing. I mean, what does it cover? It's CCK views and panels.
Yes, even in that order.
Oh, the
first,
awesome.
The first third of the book is CCK. The middle third is views, and the middle third is the last third is panels. So you kind of have the build your object, view your object, display your object sort of flow of the book.
Pretty awesome. Nice.
I like it. And you can buy it on Amazon.com. Drupal Building Blocks, again, is the name of the book. Or you can go to DrupalBuildingBlocks.com and get more information about that. The book on views and panels from the guy who wrote views and panels. I think last time we had you on the podcast, Earl, you were at that point in the book where you wonder if it's ever going to end.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it's a triumphant experience to have it finished and out there. So, congratulations.
The really sad part is Lynette wrote the bulk of the book, and she finished all of her stuff, which was three times as much as I had to write before I finished my stuff.
Yeah.
But you refactored it like four times.
I did, and every time I cut more stuff that I just wasn't going to write out.
Yeah. Well, cool. All right, let's segue into this subject of this podcast. So, maybe Jeff Eaton, you can sort of set up the background on this. I don't even know that I'm completely caught up with all of the different nooks and crannies that this. can you provide us a history of the parentheses concept of end parentheses the Drupal App Store?
Well, in about the early 1970s. No, I'm kidding. I mean, most recently, Robert Douglas of Acquia ended up tweeting, I think about a week or so ago, just a real short comment saying something about, you know, would an iPhone style app store, would that be good or bad for Drupal? And basically sort of challenged everybody in the community to say what they thought about it, to, you know, make their case for or against it, and, you know, see what they thought. And he also was talking about the fact that he was going to be presenting on that very subject at an upcoming Drupal event. So it was a pretty crafty move, you know, building hype for his talk that he was going to be doing. As someone who loves building pre-hype for presentations, I give major props to that. But it was fascinating because it was obvious this wasn't just, you know, a subject of mild curiosity for most people. I mean, it was like immediately tons and tons and tons of really, really intense, you know, feelings and really, it was really obvious that people had been thinking about this kind of issue for a long time, both because Apple's App Store for the iPhone and similar models that have started rolling out on other platforms, and now even the Mac OS has an App Store that works pretty much the same way. There's a lot of existing debate about how that works, you know, how it intersects with things like the GPL and software freedom and stuff like that. And there's been a lot of existing talk about that in those areas. And now bringing that into the Drupal community where there's a strong culture of, you know, free software and how we approach these kinds of problems of, you know, funding projects and stuff like that, that those two things meeting has been really, really interesting. Lots of strong opinions.
So actually there is a kind of an event here. Robert is presenting on Saturday, which for people listening to this podcast on the day that it comes out will be tomorrow, on Saturday, February 5th at the Drupal Developer Days Brussels event, which I can only assume is in Brussels. Robert Douglas has a presentation called Sell Your Code, announcing the Droopy App Store.
And just to be clear, he said this is a thought exercise.
Well, yes, but it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that in the title. Yeah. But I don't know. Like we give him props for hyperbole, But that's where it's happening. So, but of course, you know, as with most things, a lot of conversation tends to happen out there in the internet oosphere. There's been a lot of really interesting people posting on it, including Earl, who posted a long post. What's your post called, Earl? Contributing to open source.
Yeah.
And your opinions about this. Let's continue on with the background stuff. So basically, it started just like this, if it was a tweet, right? I mean, you know, 140 characters. It just said like, sell your code, Drupal App Store. And that was where all the, everyone started moving from. But let's for a moment, assume that not everyone listening to this podcast has something pop into their head, when someone says, sell your code, the Drupal App Store.
How is that possible?
What might that mean?
Crickets.
Eaton, you have concept. Come on.
I can be trusted to have a strong and quick opinion on almost anything. The real idea, the idea was really popularized, again, by Apple with the iPhone. It's the most common example of an app store that most people are in the technical world are used to thinking about. You get an iPhone, it comes with a little icon, you tap on it, you can scroll through and say, oh, I'd like a to-do list manager, or I'd like a little game that I can play while I'm in line at the grocery store that I throw birds at pigs and I get points for it, you know, things like that. Or even, you know, I'd like to do my taxes on my phone, or whatever. You know, those kinds of things. It's like functionality that you can just go in, click it, get it, pay for it, just via mechanisms that are already in place, no negotiation, no contracts, whatever. Just click it, it gets paid for, and you can use it.
So does this assume that a module is an app, and that you would because Drupal 7 has a module installer now,
But this is the big question. This is the first big question. One of the controversies that surrounded the App Store on Apple's devices has always been that some people, whether they're experienced, you know, technical users or they're programmers who want to tinker with stuff on their own, they don't want to have to go through that. They just want to build code or get an app that a friend of theirs wrote or whatever and dump it onto their phone using their computer and be able to use it. The idea of having this channel that you go through that you must use to get new functionality for your device is something that, I mean, just at a philosophical level, it can be problematic if you really want something different. And like, there's this whole process of like jailbreaking iPhones. A lot of that is so that you can get functionality that isn't available in the App Store. You can download apps from other places and just sort of do whatever you want. So at one level, a lot of the sort of conceptual baggage that comes into a discussion about app stores is about that whole issue. Will this be reducing my ability to do things that don't involve that app store, to just do whatever I want to with my code or whatnot? So that's one question. But on the flip side, it's also, you know, you can look at the app store model, and it's made it tons easier for people to add lots of functionality to, say, a phone or an iPad or something like that. So it's a double-edged sword. It's perceived as something that makes life tons simpler for the majority of people, but also reduces freedoms for other people. That's how it works on something like the iPhone. And the big question is how would it be different in Drupal, a world where the GPL is, you know, the license for everything, you know, where you can just go to Drupal.org and download things? Would people only put things in the App Store? How would that, you know, would there be a secondary market for stuff people bought from the App Store but are giving away under the GPL, even though it's available for sale other way? I mean, there's tons of questions, but I think that huge list of big questions is one of the reasons that lots and lots of people started talking about it.
Well, and I should mention, we're actually not the first people to even do a podcast on this. The Drupal Easy guys did a podcast, which you can find over at their website, which is DrupalEasy.com. And they were talking about apps being entire, like, distributions of Drupal. Amongst the concepts they were talking about that, which is another sort of an interesting thing. So, you know, perhaps you would purchase OpenAtrium or, I mean, we're actually working on a distribution called Videola right now. It's an interesting idea. I mean, it's a lot of work to put together something like this and to maintain it. I don't know. I mean, I think the GPL, we should probably explain the GPL a little bit on this podcast, just in this context, because that's to some extent where these philosophical discussions come about. And then there's this question of can people charge for downloading this software? So anybody want to tackle the GPL? All right, I'll do it.
I know you were one of the first, like, really, really high profile, huge, like, code contributors that really weighed in heavily on this with a blog post early on. So I'm real curious, like, what your take on this is. So GPL app stores, what's the impact?
The GPL doesn't prevent me from selling my code. The GPL prevents me from telling you can't redistribute what I sell you. So, I have code, and I can do whatever I want to do with it, because it's my code, and that's the way the law works. Once I transmit that code to you, if that code is under the GPL, I cannot control what you do with that code.
As long as I also follow those same rules.
Right, you have to follow the rules of the GPL, but that beyond that, I can't control what you do with that code, which means you have the right to modify it, you have the right to redistribute it, you have the right to try and sell it back to me.
Fascinating.
It's not going to work, but you can do it.
So GPL stands for General Public License, and it is the license under which...
It's the new public license.
I think they it's one of those things they've modified it over time. But It's the license which Drupal is. It also happens to be what they call a viral license, meaning that if you create, for instance, a module for Drupal, it is also automatically under the GPL because it is dependent on, integrates with, you know, is created to work with Drupal. There are some exceptions around this, in particular stuff where there's like very distinct files, like CSS files, image files, and stuff that get pulled in separately by the browser.
The quick and easy rule is if you write executable code like PHP or C or whatever, and it plugs into something that's written and released under the GPL, your two pieces of code, yours and that GPL piece of software, essentially become one piece of code while they're running.
Not entirely true.
Yeah, there's exceptions.
The way that it's generally presented by the SFLC is if your code requires that other module, which is to say it's dependent upon it, then the GPL must apply because of the relationship. If your code could run independently, then that license does not become viral to yours. So it's possible to do bridge modules, which is the normal way around it, where the bridge module is GPL, and the bridge module integrates your code with their code.
Which means that you could, for instance, do a distribution of Drupal, which contains, let's say, a JavaScript or a PHP scripts or something like that. Okay, well, let's say JavaScript, which is not GPL'd.
Right. Let's say, for example, a good example would be I've got this fantastic date time library which is not GPL'd. I could write integration code using a Drupal module that integrates that library with Drupal. That does not automatically GPL that library. It does automatically GPL the integration code.
Right.
It's a complex situation.
It's very complex.
but this is the interesting thing. I mean, for the purpose of something like an app store, it's probably safe to offer a blanket statement that anything that you would offer in a Drupal app store, any PHP code that's a part of that would end up being under the GPL as a rule of thumb. Yeah. There are a couple edge case of exceptions to that, but for the most part, things you sell in the app store would probably be GPL'd.
And so people think GPL, free, open source, free software, free as in free beer.
Right.
And Earl, you in particular in your blog post are saying, well, not necessarily.
It doesn't have to be. Now, to be fair, if I try to do a business model where you have to pay me for my code, the first person who thinks that's annoying, which is going to be about 150 people as far as I can tell just from Twitter, are going to buy that and then put it somewhere else and say, here, you can have it for free, and then no one else is going to buy it from me unless they're doing it as a way to donate money to me,
right,
which, depending on how it works, people may do anyway. So the idea that the code itself is what you're paying for is probably never going to fly.
And it's also interesting to note that especially in the Mac App Store that's just launched, there are a number of free and open source Mac programs that are available at low prices like $2.50 or whatever in the App Store. They're still available as GPL. You can download source, you can compile it, build it, and do whatever you want to with it. But if you don't want to do that, you just want to go and click on the I want an IRC program or I want this, click the button, it's downloaded, there, it's done. That's an approach that some of them are taking. I don't have any numbers on how successful that approach is.
Well,
but
yeah, that gets into a whole bunch of other stuff. There's been things like the VLC video app that got actually it was the developers or the VLC group decided to pull from the App Store themselves because they decided that the App Store was not compatible with the GPL license. And
the licensing details themselves can be a thorny and ugly thing. I mean, it almost feels like most of the discussions we have about an App Store have to sort of take for granted that the legal details of the App Store will end up being compatible with that. You can pay to get the software in a form, but the code is still available under the GPL mix. I mean, we'd have to sort of assume that to move beyond the eternal, you know, six-layer deep flame war on /dot mode that GPL discussions can tend to get into.
And ultimately, I mean, this is really, I mean, just looking at it from a purely like business perspective, someone can take your code, they can redistribute it. Really, you know, there are a couple different ways of looking at it. I mean, one is it's basically a donation model. And you could almost even see it as this donation paywall, which is kind of awkward, saying like, you must donate some sort of an amount that's not so ridiculous that people won't feel like they need to redistribute this software. So you must donate $3.50 to download this module in order to, in order to have it. It's going to end up being sort of micro payment-y, or maybe there'd be, you know, or you could take it for free.
There are actually two, I'm going to say there are three specific things that add a bit of a different twist to that. One is, there are a fairly large number of people who are willing to pay a small amount for the pure convenience of not having to wrangle stuff and mm-hmm. figure it out. Like I will click this button and pay $2 to download an IRC client instead of compiling it. You know, stuff like that. Whether or not Drupal has good infrastructure for that kind of approach is a separate question, but, you know, that's one of the ways that benefits can be had. Paying money for free software in order to essentially get a special badge of some, you know, basically to be authorized to get to support forums or, you know, immediate notification of updates or priority access to, you know, the VIP room, whatever, you know. I mean, those kinds of secondary benefits beyond just possessing a copy of the program itself are usually what comes along as the benefits to paying for things that would otherwise be under open source. And that's been nailed down pretty effectively, you know, in other areas of the open source world. So the idea that if you went to an app store and you clicked a button to download it, you're not just paying the developer because you think it's a good piece of software and you're willing to pay them for that, but you're also getting sort of secondary benefits. And the third thing, and I'll shut up in a second, I promise. The third thing is a very interesting issue that's just come to light in the WordPress community. Although they have the WordPress plugins and themes repository that's a centralized place where you can go and get stuff, same as Drupal, there's a much, much, much larger ecosystem of third-party theme sites for Drupal where you can go out on the internet, search for free WordPress themes, and there's 8 million websites where you can go and download free WordPress themes. The problem is, I'll post the link to this article on the podcast node, but the really interesting thing is that it turns out today, if you search for free WordPress themes on Google, roughly 9 out of 10 of the first, I think, several dozen results on Google are actually malware sites that have taken freely available WordPress themes, inserted exploit code into them, and are redistributing these cracked malware versions of free WordPress themes on SEO targeting sites. So basically the only safe place to actually get free WordPress themes is the WordPress.com plugin repository.
Whoa,
so
you're blowing my mind.
Yeah.
And I mean it's really, really rough because basically if you download these things and you put them on your website, you are running PHP code other people have written. And if you just blindly go out there and get stuff just because it looks cool, you could easily be just downloading something that somebody is using. Somebody could now be, you know, turning your blog into an SEO farm or something like that. And the App Store concept, whether it's via Drupal.org's download section or the WordPress codecs or the Apple App Store icon on your iPhone, gives the "this is official" stamp of approval. Or at the very least, you know, there's someone who I can yell and scream at if something bad came through this source. And that, I think, is a subtle but worthwhile distinction in a world where lots of sources to get things exist.
Huh.
And, it's an interesting analogy with the music world, you know, where there were everyone wanted free MP3s through BitTorrent and LimeWire, and then I believe there was a period where a lot of bad MP3s were sort of seeded into the system, and because it was a distributed model, you know, you get little snatches of sort of a bad file in the music you downloaded. And it was quickly demonstrated by the iTunes store that people were willing to pay 99 cents or $1.99 or whatever to ensure that they got a good, solid, canonical, safe version of the song that they wanted.
Wasn't it Madonna who was uploading MP3s, which had her at the beginning basically swearing at the person and telling them that they shouldn't be downloading them either?
I would have paid extra for that version.
I'm trying to remember. Somebody was just sort of cursing them out in some way, basically.
In the music version of Malware.
Yeah.
Well, there's I think part of the thing that catalyzed this whole App Store discussion was, you know, in part the Mac Store launched in the beginning of this month. And then there was this, I'm not sure exactly when this site launched, but it's called WPplugins.com, which is like WordPress plugins. And the price point on these WordPress plugins is pretty interesting if you look at it. It probably averages somewhere between $15 or $20. It's not like the micro payment of a dollar. And some of the plugins are upwards of like $40, $50, or $60 for like forums or SEO or stuff like that. So I think actually one of the first tweets that went out that Robert Douglas sent out was, why would this be a bad idea for Drupal, you know, to look at this site and the model that they have here. And it seems like two angles here. One is for the perspective of the developer trying to make money, and the other is sort of a user experience for the people trying to find a good quality, modules or functionality that they would rather just pay the money and know that there's going to get a certain amount of quality rather than sort of going through and searching all the thousands of modules on Drupal.org.
Well, and it's that balance too, right? I mean, Earl, over time you have worked for Sony Music, and now you're working for IO1, and for both of those companies, I mean, you were basically, you know, continuing to work on views and panels. You've been really lucky in being able to find jobs that did that, but yes. You know, what if you didn't? I would venture to say, and I'm not even venturing to say, Views is the most popular, well, second most popular Drupal module. I think it's the most important contribution module. I'm looking at the views page here. It's installed on 273,114 different websites. If all of them were to pay you $10, that'd keep you in business.
Oh yeah. I would be very happy. Views is number one in terms of actual installs.
There you go.
I can see where CCK might technically eclipse it, but you can use Views without CCK, and really, if you have CCK and you don't have Views, what are you actually doing with CCK?
You're better. Okay.
It's not that it's better. It's just that the way the dependency chain works out, one needs the other, which is... if you have CCK and you built your data, you have to have some way of fetching that data, and Drupal won't do that for you.
And it's also an interesting bit of trivia. Way back in like 2005 or 2006, when the CCK roadmap for how could this be built in a way that would be useful to Drupal was laid out, one of the big tasks was, well, we're also going to need some way to build listing pages.
Yeah, that was phase three.
Yeah, and Views came along and basically solved that problem so that it didn't have to be done inside of CCK.
Right, which probably benefited everyone, because if it were done inside of CCK, it would have ended up being CCK-specific.
Right.
Whereas Views is Drupal-specific. It can theoretically list anything that you tell it about. So that ended up benefiting everyone. So my the reason I got into this discussion to begin with was there was a lot of sentiment on Twitter that the idea of an app store was a bad idea, that software should be free. And I can kind of summarize everything I thought as most modules on Drupal.org, with the exception of, say, the top 10, really exist because someone had an itch to scratch. Mm-hmm. Now, you can scratch itches with development, but here's a question for you. Do design, support, bug fixing, mm-hmm. and all the other things that go with providing a product, are those itches that people need to scratch for themselves? Bug fixing, maybe, but supporting other people?
Yeah, I mean, there's just that classic thing. I've had this, you know, I build a module for a site that I'm working on, and it works for me. It's great. You install it. It's like, oh, this is a really nice module. I bet other people would enjoy this. You put it up on Drupal.org, and other people do enjoy it. And then other people have other uses for it, and they have some problem that you're not having, and it works a little bit differently on their system. And it's like, now I'm into the goodness of my heart. You know, and like, okay, all right, you know, this is good, I'll help, but you know, I'm running low about at this point, and yeah. You know, I gotta make sure that, you know, we're still making money and can keep everyone at the company, you know, making their salary and stuff like that, you know. And now it's like a little bit beyond, you know, and I really want to help, but you know, it's just kind of a matter of math at a certain point.
Well,
you know,
Ryan of the Drupal Commerce Project actually posted an interesting blog post as well. One of the comments that he made, and I think this sort of captures a little bit of what you were talking about, Earl, was a paid distribution channel, which is basically what the App Store is, won't provide you with the time or money to code or support your module in the first place. You still have to make the initial investment in time or money to get whatever it is that you're calling an app written. And then afterwards, you still have to support it and troubleshoot it. And when people click that button and, you know, pay $5 or 99 cents or $50 or whatever to download it, if it explodes in their faces, you're on the hook now. Patches,
oh, yes.
Welcome is not an acceptable answer if somebody just paid you $50.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely correct.
Yeah, yeah. It's
not a deal killer.
It's much more of a commitment, but I just want to say this. $2,431,140. How's that sound, Earl?
Is that $10 for every copy?
I'll tell you what.
That's $10 for every install of views.
If I was getting that kind of money, I would be a lot less snippy in the views queue over people asking stupid questions.
Well, you would have a views
company. That, and I would hire someone.
Yeah, you would have a views company, and you'd have four people mm-hmm. working for you, and you would just be doing that. I'm not saying this is the right way to go. Not at all. I'm just saying it's a fascinating thought.
Well, that would also be like, you know, there's only a few apps that would really get to that point, you know, and then
you know,
the amount of money there is sort of, you know, if you look at freemium
models on the web too, I mean, this isn't like a completely untouched area. This isn't like a question nobody's asked before. On average, like on web apps that offer a free product and, you know, a value add where people can, you know, pay to join or something like that, you usually get a conversion rate on a successful product of like somewhere, I think, from 1-3%. So of those 200,000 websites that are using it, you know, if you were to, say, have a price tag on it, a much smaller percentage are going to be downloading that. At least theoretically. I mean, it's really hard to estimate those kinds of things, but it's fair to say that a lot of the things that Views gets used for right now don't necessarily leverage the full flexibility and power of Views, and it might be a lot more likely that someone would jump in and write a really simple, this just makes lists of nodes kind of module if they felt like there was a way to undercut the price point, which raises an interesting kind of dynamic that we've never really dealt with in the Drupal community before. The idea of directly competing with another module is usually purely like an architectural or philosophical question, not like I could steal their market.
Right.
Yeah, or Views with two S's.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> It leads to a lot of fragmentation. And in the WordPress world, you know, there's probably 40 or 50 or 60, you know, viable sort of photo gallery modules. And as a noob, it's really hard to sort out, well, which one should I use? What is sort of the canonical version?
Exactly. Like in the Drupal really world, we have none. Yeah.
Like 6 or 7 modules, right? No, right. I mean, at least in Drupal, there is sort of an incentive for consensus of what is best, because we're all sort of working towards the common good, you know, and sharing information freely. And there isn't this sort of extrinsic reward, you know, hanging over us of money.
But like Eric Gunderson, I believe, commented on Boris Mann's blog post about this.
Incidentally, let me just quickly. Okay, there is a post on groups.drupal.org that Jeremiah Davis from Advantage Labs posted, which is at groups.drupal.org/node/ here we go, 122904, and it kind of sums up a whole bunch of these posts and blog posts that people have posted everywhere. Continue, Jeff Eaton.
Well, I mean, Eric Gunderson's comment, and he's the head of a development seed. They've done a lot of work on things like features and open atrium and stuff like that. So they're probably one of the companies that's put the most elbow grease and time into building what you could call products that are just based on Drupal. I mean, the things that are easy to describe as that. The idea that you could do a bunch of configuration, bundle it up, and it's a feature that you could now distribute. They put a lot of time and money and effort into building that infrastructure. And his comment was, you know, just on a personal level, he would happily pay $15 for a well-configured, well-styled, drop-it-in-and-turn-it-on photo gallery feature for the wedding site that he's putting together right now. It would be really cool. You can build your own if you want to. And, you know, like there's a chapter in using Drupal on it doing exactly that. And then you can style it however you want. But as Drupal has gotten more flexible over the past couple of years, we've really lost a lot of those drop it in, turn it on, and you now have X. It just works. We've lost a lot of those modules. They've sort of been culled out of the ecosystem as everyone has worked on toolkit type stuff. And I think some of the excitement around this App Store idea comes from that, I guess, gap that we now have in the Drupal world. There aren't that many things that you can just drop in, switch on, and now I have these kinds of functions that I just sort of would like to have on my website.
Yeah, if you look at, I buy a lot of Legos for my kids, and if you look at the way they sell Legos, they don't really sell Legos as pieces anymore. You know, they sell them as these little kits that sort of allow you to create, you know, my daughters get the girl Legos, so they can create a little house with the
ponies. Are girl Legos now?
Oh, they're terrible. They send Lynette into fits of rage.
I'm fascinated by the idea that this even the Lego analogy of this same debate triggers the same strong feeling. It's like, no,
it's also not entirely true, because you can actually go to the Lego store and they have giant barrels, and you can just dig into the barrels and get out big cups of Legos and then go and do stuff.
But obviously, Earl, you're a hacker.
Yeah. Because that's what I care about.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's really interesting. It's like the idea that, no, I just want to go to Drupal.org, I want to go through, I want to look for modules, I want to piece things together, and then I'll customize it, and, you know, I've got a friend who's willing to make me a logo in Illustrator or whatever. Well, okay, that's the way I approach it. Other people actually have the skills to make logos. But the idea of assembling that thing to build just what you want is really tied to that, you know, app store. But
what if you could buy the, you know, the whole Millennium Falcon Lego kit built? Or pieces.
With just the right pieces sort of pre-configured. Yeah. And snap
just
together.
The right pieces and the instructions on how to put it together. What I think you would get with an app store like this is you would get a lot of that, and you would get companies that spring up specifically to create a series of these apps, sell them all at a relatively low price point, create one support structure to handle having these 8, 10 dozen apps or whatever. You get the same thing around the iPhone App Store. You got companies that will churn out $2 apps and try to make it up on volume.
Mm,
yeah. And I think that you would probably get that in the Drupal world, where they don't actually produce much in the way of code. What they do is produce solutions and try to sell people a turnkey solution that uses existing code, so that the actual effort they spend building it is much more conceptual than it is code, and any support that has to be done, they can kind of support what they did to put it together and push the rest of that back off on the authors of the modules that they're building it on.
So, Earl, is
that
this
either awesome or horrible?
I was going to say, I can't tell if this is a good thing or a bad thing. What do you think, Earl?
I think overall it's a good thing, as long as those companies take some responsibility for helping make sure those modules are capable of doing what they need.
And I've been saying for a while now, I really think that the future of Drupal is distributions, that Drupal can do a lot of things, but basically people want to get the Millennium Falcon kit or better yet, the finished version. And, you know, while it is this wonderful, I mean, Legos is a great analogy, you know, it's a wonderful kit for building different kinds of things. Wouldn't it be nice to know, rather than just playing around and maybe you get something that kind of looks like a castle, that you actually are getting Hogwarts, you know? You know, and we had a lot of Legos here at Christmas time this year. Oh, lots.
And did they all have warts?
No, Hogwarts from Harry Potter.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I just thought it was funny. You got your Drupal Legos, and there's a whole lot of warts there.
So, well, anyway. That's true. That's true, too. But anyways, I think that it's an interesting thing. I mean, there's always sort of quality control issues. There always will be, opportunistic people who will come in. I mean, even your WordPress situation that you mentioned, Jeff, is like, oh my gosh, by having Drupal.org as sort of the canonical location where there's one, theoretically, one repository, CVS repository, soon to be Git, that someone could conceivably, you know, search through and kind of look for, you know, malware patterns. You can't do that if everything's spread out all over and you don't quite know what you're downloading. I don't mean to spread FUD around this, but, you know.
Well, I mean, and WordPress has, I mean, by hosting their central module repository, their module downloads center, and their theme download center, you know, they have really, I mean, that's not a problem when you go to WordPress.org and you say, on WordPress.org, I want to find modules and I want to find themes. The problem is that their ecosystem has a much, much larger pool of people that are out there running, you know, oh, here's my website where I made these 5 WordPress themes and I have them for download on my website. And then there are other websites that say, oh, here are 30 of the best free themes for download. And they also happen to insert spam links in your footer. You know, things like that. I mean, it's tricky, and we're already seeing, especially in the theming side on Drupal, more external sources to get themes. Some of them are like super legit and obviously, you know, very high quality, you know, professional companies that are building themes and selling the design work. And occasionally there's also just people that are starting to set up other free theme download sites on the side. And, you know, it's, I think, a year from now, if that ends up becoming more and more common, I can see more interest on the part of non-developers in having vetted places for stuff like this.
Yeah, and my interviews with top-notch theme owners, you know, Stephanie Packerell, they often mention that, like, their biggest customers are actually, like, developers who are, like, throwing together a quick site, and they just don't have time to do, like, a custom theme or to implement it, so they'll just sort of have it in their budget to kind of go to them and buy it. So I imagine that something similar may happen with, you know, some sort of app store. If there's a functionality that you don't you know, maybe who's a freelance developer that doesn't have time themselves to develop it may go out and get sort of a prepackaged solution that could do a good enough job with actually making it happen.
There's also some interesting concepts. Earl, there was a comment on your blog post where someone was saying, I work for the government. The government can't donate to software. However, if I go to my boss and say, I want to buy this distribution, this module, this whatever, I can get money approved for that. I can't get money approved for a donation. You know, so it's a funny, you know, little bits and pieces that we don't always consider.
That's true in the corporate world as well.
Yeah.
I mean, corporations don't donate. Or if they do, it has to be to a 501c3 where they can get the tax discount. And the reason they're donating is more for the corporate tax off, write off.
Yeah.
Major corporations are usually at a structural level not set up to say, yeah, if we totally send this one guy in Australia like three cases of good beer that he can't get there, he'll totally fix this bug for us.
Yeah. What's kind of funny is what I was describing earlier, where you have an app store where the apps are not actually modules, but they're turnkey solutions. I think what I described is the feature server, and the only reason there isn't a really good feature server out there with a bunch of random features is there's no motive to do so.
Mm-hmm. Financially. I mean, business motive.
It's things exist on Drupal.org because originally someone was scratching their itch, and they were able to put it out there, and enough people cooperated, or for whatever reason, that it took off, and there's goodwill and need keeping that stuff maintained. But when you're talking about building turnkey solutions, you don't ever really build those for yourself. If you do, you don't share them.
I've been thinking recently about this this sort of concept of like open source developer vow of poverty. Right? Like what? Like let's take it the totally the other direction. Let's say you say, you know what? I have discovered my lot in life. This is what I want to do. I want to develop free software and put it out there for the good of the world, for the good of the people. You know, and you could sort of joke around. We see these people in the Drupal community, and you know, they need to take a bath. But I just like open source stinky open source hippies, you know. I don't know that these people are out there, but it's just, you know, it's this kind of like, you know, let's take it to its extreme. So let's say you do that. I mean, there are only so many hours in a day that you can work. You start contributing modules. You start contributing code. You start, you know, and now we're totally separated from needs of money and needs of food and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, there's only so much time that you have. I mean, you will continue to give and give and give of yourself. And I mean, Earl probably knows this feeling, like, how much can I give? You know, I mean, it just before it starts to become a siphon effect, and it's just like now people expect it of me, and now they're pulling more than I can give. You know, and it just, I don't know. I guess, you know, maybe there are ways that you could do that, by keeping some clear boundaries around what you're doing, what you're maintaining. If you were creating a JavaScript library or something like that, and it was very focused on what it did, you could make it do exactly that. And there would be a certain point where you were done. But man, I don't feel like anything
open source is really hard on passionate perfectionists.
Well, it is.
Yeah. But I don't feel like anything in Drupal is ever done. So I don't know.
Exactly. Passionate perfectionists.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a few modules that don't do much that are basically done. Global redirect, for example, because it's really important, but it doesn't really do much.
It's one of those things where this task is done. It's like anything else is gilding the lily. Let's move on.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Anyways, it was just a thought I had going.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, this sort of financial incentive and getting sort of paid back is sort of a big thread in the Drupal App Store, I think, just, you know, people getting paid for their time. And there's the interesting model that is sort of thrown about the same discussion, which is Kickstarter, kickstarter.com, where people can basically essentially create a short video, and that is a pitch for I want to do this project, but I need money. And then it's basically crowdsourced. Like, people give small payments or large payments, and they have a pledged goal. And if they get the goal, they get the money. And if they don't, then no one has to pay anything. So it's basically like this crowdsourcing and crowdfunding model where, you know, potentially, I'm not sure if there's been any Drupal projects that have done this yet, but
I think we should start a Kickstarter to try and get Earl $2,431,140.
Imagine if Earl did that. I mean, Earl, I bet if you put out a Kickstarter project, you'd be
Views already exists is the thing. He's not kickstarting it. And that, so there's this sort of momentum problem, you know, to some extent, the cat is out of the bag
for what you've been giving me for years.
Yeah.
Well, and Kickstarter at the end of the day is about presenting an idea that you need the resources to implement. And the idea of what you're supposed to have as your Kickstarter page is basically your pitch. And basically, you're supposed to convince people that we can actually pull this off. The problem isn't, you know, please pay for me to think hard about this problem.
He's already pulled it off. I think it's a great investment.
But I think it's also a network. It's like, there's a guy, Frank Chimero, who just had this book idea called The Shape of Design. And he basically raised $27,000 in like 4 hours. You know, it was like less than a day he raised all this money. So I look at that and I think this guy probably already has like a pretty strong network. He has a reputation in the community. Yeah. And he's able to basically like put up a really well done video, and like he's still got 27 days to go and he's already raised like $56,000 for his $27,000 goal. But it just shows me that this guy isn't just like coming out of nowhere. He's already got a network of connections and a community that he's tapping into some way, and people are able to kind of like take that rush and give some, you know, money, energy back to him.
On the other hand, the Diaspora Project.
move along.
Earl? Something that makes me fundamentally sad is that project. Anyway, you in order to use something like Kickstarter, you do need to already have a good network, and it's actually already been done in the Drupal community and not very successfully. And it's partly because, in my experience, the vast majority of Drupal developers are some of the worst salespeople you'll ever see. And this is mostly because, and I know this is very true of me, and it's very true of a lot of people I know, in general, as a person, I find doing marketing distasteful. I feel slimy when I have to do it, and I try to avoid it at all costs. And a lot of developers who think the same way I do feel the same way I do. Unfortunately, using something like Kickstarter, you have to turn yourself into a good salesperson in order to make it work. And I know good salespeople that are not slimy, and I respect them a lot, and those people are not me.
This is actually interesting, because one of the most recent posts on this whole thing by, I think, Ronald Ashry, I think it just went up today. One of the things that he said, his whole premise of his post was that the lack of professionally marketed Drupal apps or solutions is actually one of the things that he feels really hurts the uptake of Drupal at the very tail end of, like, you know, people saying, oh, I want to put together my florist shop. And he gave an example of just telling his dad, you know, okay, you should do your small business's website in Drupal. I can help you build it. But his dad was saying, we need like forms to collect information from people. And he was saying, oh, web form, we can totally do that. But then he went and found this WordPress, this site for a $35 WordPress plugin that does probably about maybe 50 to 60% of what the web form module for Drupal does, but it's this like sparkling Ajax powered, you know, web 2.0 with, you know, starbursts, you know, site, basically giving the pitch and the story and the cost benefit, you know, hey, you'll get this feature and you can do this and you'll be able to do this for your business, basically selling their data collection plugin. And then he went to Drupal.org and went to the web form page because, you know, his son had said, hey, this is the module we can use in Drupal. And it was basically an explanation of what field types that the web form module supports, what data types you can download it in, and what its compatibility is, and what the status of the Drupal 7 port was. Hmm. And from a developer's perspective, I absolutely know which one of those sets of information I want. I'm annoyed and angered looking at the sales and marketing and gallery pitch for that when I'm building a website and I need to know if this can, if this is views compatible or whether it's, it can trigger actions. I want to see the code. I want to see the specs. I want to see those kinds of things. But if you're Joe Public who says, I need to put up a website for, you know, my gardening supply company. There isn't stuff like that in the Drupal world for specific Drupal solutions. We're just starting to get into it where Drupal as a community and as an ecosystem is getting sold like that, but you don't see that.
Hmm. So... Have we really looked at both sides of this?
Yeah, I was going to say we need to address the counter argument.
I was going to say
I didn't capitalists here.
Yeah, I didn't know where this was going to go, and it seems like we're like, yeah, this is a great idea, let's do it. But okay, let's talk about the other side for a minute. Why is this a horrible idea?
One of the things that I think would be bad about an app store is. One of the benefits to views is that there's, in the last year, year and a half, a fairly large ecosystem of other developers have been contributing heavily to it. I didn't do almost anything in the 777 port, for example, and a lot of the the more medium features in Views 3 were done by other people. I did most of the big hard stuff, stuff I considered easy. I pushed off on other developers. It worked really well. In the case of if I were charging for views, I really wouldn't be able to do that because, hey, I'm getting paid for my work. Why are these people going to do their work for free unless there's some reason they really, really want it? That said, if I'm getting enough money, I can pay people to do that work anyway, but most apps aren't going to be getting enough money to actually really pay full-time development work unless it's something really huge.
Even if you were, let's say, hiring people to do that work, there's a certain threshold. You would choose those people, whereas now it's this very wonderfully inclusive, like someone could say, I'm going to sit down this weekend and try and get my head around views and look at the code and learn from the code, and then, I think I discovered something in here. I'm going to submit a patch. And anyone can do that. It's wonderfully democratic in that way.
Well, and another example is a lot of the features that we currently benefit from that are just flat out built and sponsored by and donated back to the Drupal community by large companies, it would be very, very difficult. It would be a lot more difficult to integrate those things directly into the project and to make the case to those companies for donating their work back in this situation. Like an example is the caching layer for Views in Views 2 was basically sponsored by Verizon. I mean, it's not heavily publicized, but basically they were building an incredibly views-heavy website that needed to have, 80 gabillion internal authenticated users pounding it at the same time every day. And they needed views to be cached, so they basically paid for, about 2 full man weeks of development time to go in and build and test that and get it donated back so that it was just a feature in Views. And that made sense to them. They were able to piggyback on that work. Everybody benefited from it. It's, the circle of life. It's an open source happy story.
But if this they were donating Verizon code to a paid module,
it would be a lot more difficult to make the case for that kind of workflow. There are other ways that it could be done. It's not an insurmountable problem, but making the case for it becomes infinitely more complicated in those scenarios too.
You've got some people who are getting paid to do their work, some people who aren't. Mm-hmm. That's inherently alienating.
Mm-hmm. We have to look at the surprising truth about what motivates us. Thank you, Daniel Pink. I think Drive, makes an interesting point. Drive is this new sort of the new hotness in business books, along with The Big Short. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting is in The Big Short, you know, one of the guys, Paulson or Barry, who made gazillions of dollars on the credit default swaps in the housing market, you know, said in order to understand human behavior, we simply have to look at the incentives. You know, what are the incentives? And people will respond rationally. So you think, okay, money is, you know, an obvious extrinsic motivator. It's a great incentive and we all need it. So how could this be a bad thing? But, you know, in Drive, Daniel Pink comes in and says, well, hey, let's wait a second. There's this great experiment that he does in the beginning with some old puzzle. It's not a Rubik's Cube, but it's some, like, Fisher-Price puzzle. And he has two groups. And the first day with these two groups, he pays each of them the first day they're allowed to just play with the puzzle, right? So they get into it. No, this is pretty cool. I like this puzzle. I'll mess around with it. Meanwhile, in the room, there's a bunch of distractions. And, you know, the next day, they pay one group and they don't pay the other group. And then the third day, they come back and say, okay, we don't have any more money. The group that they paid, I'm doing a terrible job of this, but the group that they paid suddenly sort of lost interest in the puzzle because they had been previously paid to work on it and now they weren't getting paid. So they pick up the issue of Playboy that's sitting on the edge of the table, or they go make a coffee. They kind of lose interest. The group that was never paid any of the 3 days just became more and more and more intrinsically motivated or interested in the puzzle.
Because the puzzle was the motivation itself. It's a fascinating Rubik's Cube kind of thing, right?
Exactly. And you know, what he discovered was that when you introduce money into the equation, people would stop doing it for free when they realized, hey, you know, I can get paid to do this, and I'm not going to do it if it's, you know, if I'm not being paid. Now, obviously, this is a bit, you know, of a stretch as an analogy because we all get paid in our own ways. But I think a lot of the open source purists are coming from the perspective of, you know, you're going to hurt the intrinsic motivation of the community if you make it all driven by money. And I think that's a really sort of black and white view. I think it's a little too black and white, but I think that's one of the counterarguments.
And checks, Caroli, one of the big code contributors to Drupal Core, in a tweet earlier, actually made a very interesting point that I hadn't thought about. And I'm still mulling over what I think of this. But he said, Drupal has always treated end users as potential contributors to Drupal rather than customers of Drupal. And I think that's a really interesting distinction. Even when you go in and you know, so you download a module and you have a problem with it, the style of engaging that Drupal has always, that the Drupal website and the Drupal community has always sort of assumed is, if you come with a problem, well, technically it's support, but you're sort of a co-participant in the improvement of something rather than a customer who is getting an answer from the company or something like that.
Yeah, but that also sort of gets back to that same by developers for developers problem with open source so often. It's like, yes, yeah, we'll just create a patch. It's like, what do you mean create a patch? I've never even written a line of PHP code in my life. Well, learn it. Learn Git. Learn PHP. This is a good thing for you. And it's like, I'm a dog groomer. I don't care about this. You know, like, you know, so there is that, but I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing. I don't know.
I think one thing that I don't know whether it's been brought up yet before is for this sort of concept of I would like to be able to just click a button and have functionality X, you know, the big sort of selling point for a lot of this. I'm not convinced that that's doable outside of a couple of very narrowly restricted mm-hmm. scenarios.
Yeah.
In Drupal as we currently think of it as developers. Like, where those kinds of models work well are isolated, self-contained functionality. Like, I would like to download a gallery, drop it in, and it is my site's photo gallery. End of story. It doesn't touch other parts of the site. It doesn't do other
things.
Well,
that's sort of the concept of features module and sort of yeah. the direction that was going with feature server and all that stuff.
And I can say from experience, when you start trying to build those kinds of encapsulated pieces of functionality that just you turn them on and they go, any time they have to interact with each other or there's any kinds of cross connections between them, that gets really, really difficult to manage. Right now, today in Drupal, we really put a lot of, we always assume that it's going to be a developer sort of manually finessing those interactions, not that it's just something that will automatically happen.
So I guess another thing on the, you know, negative side of this is that who is going to build an app store? I mean, you know, is this going to be on Drupal.org? You know, we sort of have this inherent problem in Drupal in general in that there is no one company that runs Drupal. That is both Drupal's greatest strength and greatest weakness.
I should totally build this for Do It With Drupal as my fantasy section.
You could. But like, you know, but then you will have built a Drupal app store, not the Drupal app store. And you know, to some extent, by definition, unless it's like the Drupal Association for some reason decides that this is a great idea, and wants to, as Seth is mentioning, kill the intrinsic, motivators that currently motivate the Drupal community, you know, and say, no, we're going to come up with a model so everybody can get paid. Well, so some people can get paid and the rest of everybody will go off in a funk. You know, there's not going to be the store. I mean, but again, we can look at the model like the features server, which is a development seed concept, and say, well, maybe there would be these servers all over, and you could just sort of point your Drupal installation at the server and get.
And that already works today. You know, if you download features. A module from a feature server, it phones home to do its updates and stuff like that.
Really?
Podcast,
I practically thought I could hear it phoning home.
Excellent.
Kent, you're awesome with the sound effects, by the way.
Thanks.
It's interesting to, well, you know, you just mentioned this, but for really baked people's noodle is making an app store app.
Well, and you could, right?
Yeah, you know, make a turnkey Drupal distribution that sells turnkey Drupal distributions, and then Skynet takes over.
Well, I'm looking at the WPPlugins.com. It's not WordPress.com. It looks like something completely different than, you know, the Automattic and WordPress officially. And so they're taking like a 30% cut of all the costs and everything.
That's just what like Apple does. Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, and I think that's what, and some people might have been Ryan Schrama saying, the people who are really going to make out in the end are the distributors or the app stores who are taking the cuts. And I think that's one aspect of, if you look at just, you know, Drupal compared to other, you know, CMS developers like WordPress, there's a pretty high price for Drupal development. And so I'd imagine that the price point for like any apps would be significantly higher than, say, the $20 or $40 or $50 of the WordPress plugin. So you start to get to a point where the actual price of a feature may be $60, $75, or $100 or something like that. Well, and people would possibly create like a piracy back channel or something that would actually not.
Well, let's take this.
I actually disagree with that slightly, because changing the profit motive is going to bring a whole lot more people into the equation. One of the reasons that development is so expensive is supply and demand. And if you change the demand model, you're going to change the supply model. It will follow.
Yeah. Well, it just, everything changes. I want to take this even further and say, so if you've got a website that's selling stuff and taking 30%, the GPL also does not prevent a website from setting up and taking 100%, right? You know, downloadviews.com, you know, and we've got this website.
Well, I got to go register that.
I'm almost hesitant to start mentioning this because I don't want to be the person that started this trend, but it's possible, you know. What if DrupalModules.com sold modules? Gulp. You know,
there's also one other wrinkle that's recently come up with the Apple App Store. You can get refunds for at things you buy from the App Store. Most of them are priced low enough that people don't bother, you know, going through the paperwork to get a refund on the lame 99-cent throw a paper airplane app that you downloaded is just not worth it. But if you do, say, spend $15 on an app that looks promising, but it turns out to be a piece of crap, Apple has taken a 30% cut of what you gave, but the company that made the software is responsible for 100% of the refund.
Gulp.
Which means if you write code that looks awesome, if you write a piece of functionality that looks awesome and is super, super promising, and people download it and they get super excited about it, but it turns out it's actually a lot harder than they expected, or it doesn't work with other modules that they've installed, or something like that, now the question of what happens at that point is really important. Because today, the answer is, well, guess you shouldn't use my module. But if they paid for it, do they get a refund? Are they out of luck? Does the store cover the price of the refund? Or are you now actually losing money because you oversold your module?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, everyone seems very sobered after that.
I mean, looking at the negative side of things, it's yuck.
On the other hand, I would love to just have the... I mean, I would pay $15 for a photo gallery that I can just click on and it would be there on my Drupal site and not have to worry about it.
And I would pay $2,431,140 for views. Well, or like, I think that people, awesome. Wow. I think that people should. I'm just saying.
See,
Earl's going to go out and buy a car this afternoon. Yes, I should be driving a nicer car. What am I?
Lamborghini.
Yes. Okay. So let's get down to brass tacks, as they say. With this, is it going to happen? Is there going to be a Drupal App Store? Should people be thinking that all of this? Oh, should I wait for the Drupal App Store? Should I not do a module until I'm going to be able to sell it next month on the Drupal App Store? Is this going to happen?
Well, not on the Drupal infrastructure. I mean, just flat out, no. The Drupal infrastructure will probably never, unless something seriously changes, do a pay model for software. There could be a Drupal App Store on some other infrastructure. How much traction that could really get when it's not really Drupal or owned by the Drupal community or owned by the Drupal Association or anyone who actually has something core to do with Drupal, I don't know. If Acquia does it, that might have some legs. Can anyone else do it and be trustworthy and have enough reputation to pull it off? I don't know if even Acquia can do it.
Well, okay, so people are going to ask this, and so I'm going to ask it on behalf of the people, and especially since you've said this, Earl. Robert Douglas works for Acquia. Does that mean that Acquia is thinking about this, testing the waters? Is Robert representing Acquia in this concept?
I doubt it.
I honestly would seriously doubt it, because I think if there's one thing that Acquia has demonstrated, it's that, you know, their models, they contribute stuff back to the community, but I don't think anybody who's really in the development and consulting and hosting world, I don't think anybody's super eager to get into the support aspects of this.
For the record, I also doubt that he's... You know, on behalf of, yeah.
I think it is a fascinating question, though.
Acquia does have a whole business model around support. I mean, that's kind of what their whole subscription thing is. But I doubt that they would try to gather the community support to launch something like that. Doesn't seem like it. I mean, I never know, but you never know. But I doubt it.
So, yeah, I don't see this happening in the next month or months, or it's anything that anybody should be thinking about. I mean, I think it's an interesting direction, and that's why it sort of ignited the community so much, because I think that there are a lot of people in the community who have worked really hard on various stuff and feel like that the income that they make is so indirect, you know, the idea of having a more direct business model for the work that they're doing on this open source software is intriguing. But I don't see it happening anytime soon, at least. But it is a really interesting, obviously makes for an interesting discussion, as we and other podcasts have proven. Anybody have anything else to add on this topic before we bring it to an end?
I think it's fascinating. I mean, I think even beyond the question of should there be an Apple-style app store, I mean, I think it just really gets to the heart of lots of deep questions in open source about, you know, how do we fund the continuing, ongoing improvement of something, not just the initial passionate burst of coding? And, you know, how do people who really, really give a lot of value to the community, how do we begin to try to help them support that process, even if there aren't really easy, obvious ways of turning that back into, you know, a paycheck for them? How do we answer these questions? And how do we make it easier for someone who just wants to do X, not necessarily engage with a giant code base and figure out things and debug stuff? You know, somebody who just wants those benefits, how do they work with a piece of software? I think it raises all of those questions, and I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, there's also this whole idea of like open source moving up the stack, as more and more of the infrastructure becomes standardized. Then, you know, in the Drupal world, there's going to be more and more effort in trying to create these like more contained products and more usable functionality and all things like that. So I think in some ways the general trend of the open source moving up the stack and all that energy going in that direction is going to be leading towards something like the App Store or something like being easier to be able to get this functionality and distributions or whatnot. What the funding is still like a big issue, and I know that Robert Douglas had pointed to a comment by Alex Bronstein, Effulgentia, on Earl's blog, and he had a lot of really good points in there too. I just wanted to point that out because I think in all the discussion, that was probably one of the most thoughtful insights that was added to all the flame wars and discussions that was going on Twitter and blog posts and whatnot.
I think that this is we were just wrapping it up, and I don't know that we can even cover this quickly, but we're talking about the WordPress models around this. The other PHP open source content management system, Joomla, has had some, shall we say, varied history with commercial, what do they call them, modules? Joomlites?
Plugins.
Yeah, plugins.
Yeah. Mombots.
Mombots. Mombots. Oh, we can laugh. Anybody, Eaton, you've followed that probably closer than me, certainly.
That's actually really weird, because in the early days of Joomla, when they forked from Mambo and launched the Joomla project, there was actually a relatively large pool of companies that were doing commercial plugins that were not released under the GPL. So technically, that was a violation of the GPL for the same reasons why we previously explained that Drupal modules are quote-unquote infected by the GPL and have to be released under the same license. Lots of software out there was being sold in the Joomla ecosystem early on that wasn't GPL licensed.
It also was not open source.
Right, where like they could be encrypted or obfuscated code specifically so that people couldn't change the code and wouldn't be able to use it without a license or something like that. Now, the problem was everyone inside of the core development team to some extent understood that this was a problem, but they were in the middle of launching a new open source project and getting into a knife fight with you know, the commercial ecosystem that surrounded them was not high on their list of priorities. And when it finally did come time to sort of say, hey, well, that's not cool, it ended up causing a lot of friction and a lot of really, I mean, it was a real, real point of huge contention in the Joomla community for a period of time. It seems to have settled out now. And there's a lot more acceptance of the fact that, okay, things have to be GPL'd if they're, you know, Joomla plugins, but there are different ways of doing revenue models around that. And a lot of companies are still out there that have managed to shift to the GPL model, but still sell like paid access to, you know, speedy access to updates, access to support forums, things like that. So the model is there, but they sort of arrived at it by starting with that commercial ecosystem and then having to learn to live with the GPL, whereas Drupal has come at it from the other direction. We've had this vigorous, you know, roiling GPL world, and now we're starting to have to figure out how to start monetizing things to be able to create long-term sustainable structure for stuff.
Yeah, the idea, I mean, of it like a support contract kind of a thing, you know, that you get priority support on the that module or that distribution or something like that. That's certainly well within the realm of possibilities. Yeah. Huh. All right. Anybody, anything else? I think we've talked it out. Talked it to death. And we're not the only people talking about this. So we're going to post in the podcast notes lots of different links off to various other things so you can read while you've got words coming in your eyes while you're listening to us talk in your ears. And that's always difficult for me, but I don't know, maybe all these multitaskers in Drupal, you can do that. So yeah, there you go. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Earl, especially for coming on the podcast and giving us a piece of your mind.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
And
I like to share my opinion.
Yes, well, we appreciate your opinion and your code. So thanks everybody else, and take care. We'll see you next time.
Adios.
Bye bye.
Bye everybody.
Bye.